This episode is brought to you by WeVibe and their Touch X. It is the magic multitasker, meaning this vibrator is not just for your erogenous zones. You can actually use this as a massager on other parts of your body, including your face. Yep, you can even use it to apply makeup, massage in your face serums. It is fully waterproof, so you can take it in the shower with you, you can take it in the bath. And while it may sound unusual to use a vibrator as a face massager, you can count on Instagram influencers to normalize this one. There is a ton of videos out there showing you how to use your TouchX for all sorts of beauty routines. Now, this is not a bullet vibe. It's more of a smooth and squishy vibrator with a tip side and a flatter side, so you can hold it against your body or pinpoint specific areas, or even use it for contouring on your makeup. There are so many ways to use this. So if you're looking for a powerful, body-safe vibrator you can use just about anywhere, check out the WeVibe Touch X at WeVibe.com. This week on Future of Sex,
I think we really need to normalize fantasies before we even normalize talking about fantasies.
Rachel and I are in bed talking about fantasies, and I happen to describe a particular Star Wars thing.
Princess Leia in the gold bikini.
In a hot air balloon, like in a exotic place, like at sunset, and then like skydiving off of the hot air balloon. Like, but fucking first and then like coming while in the air. Like, I've seen something like that before and it was really cool.
I find that for the people who have shared and acted on their fantasies, they report being in the happiest relationships, they have the fewest sexual problems. So there are some benefits there to potentially getting in touch with our fantasies.
Hey, I'm Bryony and welcome to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. This episode is brought to you by our partners at WeVibe. And today we're exploring fantasies, something that most of us enjoy but find it hard to articulate. What sort of fantasies do you have? Are they the ones you want to play out in real life, or would you prefer to keep it in your imagination? Or do you struggle talking about and making it happen in real life? Or maybe you just struggle with having fantasies altogether. There is so much to dig into on this topic. But before we get started, I just want to remind you this podcast contains explicit language and call out a trigger warning here. We touch on themes of sexual violence and rape in this episode, which may be upsetting for some listeners. Please opt out if that is you. On today's episode, I'll be talking to two leading experts on human sexuality about sexual fantasies and how technology might help us live out our wildest sex dreams. First up, Justin Lay Miller, author of Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire, and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Justin offers an unprecedented look at sexual fantasy based on the most comprehensive scientific survey ever undertaken on sexual fantasy.
So I spent almost 2 years surveying almost 4,200 people about their sexual fantasies, and I recruited people online from all 50 states to talk about their favorite fantasies of all time, as well as hundreds of people, places, and things they've ever fantasized about. And I wanted to look at not just what are we fantasizing about, but what do our fantasies say about us? How do we talk to our partners about our fantasies? How many people have acted on their fantasies and what were their experiences like? So I wanted to take a comprehensive look at the science of fantasies.
It sounds amazing. I want to know exactly in a couple of sound bites what you learned.
So I found that for most people, their favorite fantasy of all time was something they wanted to do. It was a sexual desire. So 80% of people said they wanted to act on their favorite fantasy, but only about 20% had ever done so. So there's a big gap between fantasy and reality. However, for those people who did act on their fantasies, most of them reported positive experiences, which suggests that getting in touch with our fantasies could be good for us in our sex lives. So I find that for the people who have shared and acted on their fantasies, they report being in the happiest relationships, they have the fewest sexual problems. So there are some benefits there to potentially getting in touch with our fantasies.
Wow, I'd always conceived it the other way and thought, oh, if you have these fantasies, that they're just fantasies and they're not real life. So that's a really interesting flip of the script for me. What are the most popular fantasies?
So I found that there were really seven main themes or categories of fantasies, but there were three that almost everybody had. And those were multi-partner sex, ranging from a threesome to a much bigger group, BDSM, which could be anything from mild bondage to sadomasochistic activities, could be intense or very mild. And then the other category that almost everybody fantasized about was what I call novelty, adventure, and variety, where basically they're just taking their sex life in a new direction, like having sex in a place other than their own bed in their own bedroom. Mm. Just mixing it up in some way.
Okay, well that's, you know what? That sounds kind of safe. I thought they were going to be way more out there. Was there a big difference in between genders or between ages?
So with gender, most of the things that men fantasized about, women fantasized about as well. I also had about 5% of the sample that identified as non-binary. And what you find is that regardless of gender identity, people's fantasies are pretty similar. There are some differences. So for example, men have more group sex fantasies than women, and women have more passion and romance fantasies than men. But most men and women are fantasizing about the same things. One of the interesting things I found was that there were differences related to age, and that's something that has not been explored in any previous research. And what I find is that as people get older, and specifically as they approach about age 40, they become more interested in group sex, taboo activities, and just doing anything new and different. And interest in those activities stays high through about the mid-50s, and then it starts to decline after that. So there's sort of this time course to our sexual fantasies, it seems.
Why do you think that is?
I think a big part of the reason is because most people who are in that sort of age category are in long-term monogamous relationships. And we know that it's really hard to maintain sexual excitement with one partner long-term. And so I think people are using their fantasies as a way of introducing some novelty into their sex life to try and amp up that passion and excitement.
It's how do you know you're in a long-term relationship? How do you know you can start terming your relationship as long-term? Well, I think if you're interested, I've actually pinpointed the exact moment when a relationship goes long-term. I think it's when, before sex, you no longer take each other's clothes off, but you take your own clothes off independently, because you realize it's more practical and less time-consuming. Because in a new relationship, obviously you're filled with romance and passion, lots of fiddling with bra straps and belts and ripping. And then, one night, you don't even discuss it, you'll just find yourself independently lying adjacent to one another, and slowly, obviously, once you've established sex is on, that's normally just a sort of hopeful look towards her. Or she'll do something sensationally erotic, like mute the television. You were watching that. That can only be one thing. Yay!
I think one of the hardest things for people to talk about with their partners, if we talk about sex, like that is just such a hard thing because you are so vulnerable and potentially, you know, ashamed of what you are fantasizing about. When you were writing the book, do you go into how people can communicate their desires?
So I looked at not just whether people had talked about their fantasies with their partner, but also what were the factors that predicted having better versus worse experiences doing that. And what you find is that for people who have better experiences sharing their fantasies and also acting on them, it depends to some extent on what the fantasy is. So for example, group sex fantasies, they don't tend to go quite as well when people share them or act on them with a partner as opposed to, say, the passion and romance fantasies, because the group sex fantasies are potentially threatening, I think, to a lot of people where, you know, if you're sharing that with a partner, they might be afraid that you're trying to replace them or that you don't find them attractive anymore. So I think that speaks to the importance of when you're communicating a fantasy to a partner, making sure that you validate them in the process, right? So that they don't feel like you're replacing them. And this is especially true if your partner is somebody who is high in, say, the personality trait of neuroticism, where they don't tend to deal well with stress, or if they're somebody who has a lot of attachment anxiety, where they have a lot of fear of abandonment. So you also need to think about sort of who your partner is and how comfortable they're likely to be with your fantasy content before you go down that route of sharing them with your partner.
I had to confess to Andrew that I had a bit of alone time with episode 5.
But you've had your good time.
I've had my moment, and yes. You know what, Andrew? Thank you. On behalf of anybody who's got kids, been in a long-term relationship, thank you from the deepest bottom of my heart.
Can we talk a little bit about people that maybe have trouble fantasizing? Did you encounter any people that are like, well, I don't have fantasies?
In my research and in research of others, we find that it's a consistent 2-3% of the population who say they don't have sexual fantasies. And I've become really interested in who these people are. And there's not a lot of research looking at people who don't fantasize, but something I recently learned about was this concept of what's called aphantasia, which is this inability to voluntarily visualize mental imagery. And that's not just sexual imagery, that's any mental imagery at all. And so I stumbled on this informal survey online that looked at people with aphantasia, and it talked specifically about their sexual fantasies. And it was so interesting to read about kind of how fantasies work for them when they can't picture mental imagery. So a lot of them describe their fantasies as being narratively driven, right? So it's like they're reading a story to themselves almost. Other people describe their fantasies as a feeling rather than a scene, right? So it seems that there are some qualitative differences there for people with this aphantasia.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other group? I'm thinking of women that I've talked to or friends that say, well, first of all, that they don't masturbate, but then they can't think of anything to masturbate to. Like, is that something, do you give people tips on how to discover a new fantasy or where fantasies might be able to be born?
That's an interesting question, and I don't know of any research that speaks to it, but something I'm thinking about as we're talking about this is one of the things I surveyed people about was basically how active their imagination is. And I find that for people who have really active imaginations, they fantasize more about almost everything, right? Yeah. And they fantasize more frequently. But for people who don't have those active imaginations, there's a much more restricted range of content. They don't fantasize nearly as much. So part of it is just sort of this individual difference and kind of how much our minds tend to wander. And I don't know if there's anything we can do to help people stimulate that imaginative aspect of the self. That's something I think would be really cool to study in future research.
All right, maybe you are looking to spice it up with your lover this weekend, maybe this weeknight, depending on when you're listening. But I wanted to introduce you to a really simple, fun way to spice up your sex, which doesn't, surprise, surprise, involve a sex toy. Now, maybe you haven't incorporated toys into partnered play yet, and that's totally fine, or maybe you're just looking for something else. Now, what I love about Frenchie, who have developed this lover's kit, is that it includes all the good stuff to make sex just a bit better, okay? So first you're gonna get lube, which we can't get enough lube, right? All great sex includes lube, no matter how wet you get. Using lube is only gonna enhance the experience. Condoms as well. We love great sex. They've got condoms in there. I think the winner for me is the silk play mask, and I'm going to tell you why. A blindfold is just such an easy, simple hack to spice up your sex life. It's because the wearer loses their inhibitions, right? You automatically assume a more submissive role when you're wearing that, and it can lead to really enhanced sensations of touch or smell or anything else, which is really exciting. And I think for the observer, the partner that gets to watch, that's a real treat too. Such a simple hack for spicy sex. Get yourselves a sleeping mask, and even better, get it in the lover's kit, which Frenchie have put together, which also includes, if you're into fun and games, a lover's dice set. This all includes free global shipping. Go to getfrenchie.com and check out the lover's kit for everything you need for a passionate night in.
Was there anything else around the science of fantasy that you want to share? before we move on to dick pics?
There's so many things. So one of the things that I spend a lot of time exploring in the book is kind of what your fantasies say about you and how they're related to, say, your personality and your sexual history. And that's one of the things that I found to be really interesting, was that our fantasies seem to be connected to a lot of aspects of the self. So for example, if you're somebody who is very extroverted in real life, you're very outgoing and sociable, you tend to be very outgoing in your sexual fantasies, right? You have more group sex fantasies, more non-monogamy fantasies. Also, if you're somebody who's very high in the personality trait of agreeableness, where you have a lot of care and concern for other people's welfare, your fantasies are much more partner-centric and focused on their pleasure. And also, if you're somebody who doesn't deal well with stress, if you're high in neuroticism, you tend to play it pretty safe in your fantasies. You don't want to go out and try a lot of new things, because trying new things can be stressful, right? So our fantasies say a lot about us. They also say a lot about our sexual history. One of the things I found interesting was I asked people what sexual activities took place the first time they had sex. And I found that whenever a given activity took place the first time they had sex, they were more likely to have frequent fantasies about it later on, which suggests that early experiences might shape later sexual fantasies.
One thing I'd heard a while ago is that one of the most popular fantasies, and it actually probably was one of the most popular porn categories now I think of it, was rape fantasies. And I was curious if anything came up in the research specifically around that.
Yeah, so I asked people whether they'd ever had a forced sex fantasy before. I don't call them rape fantasies. I know a lot of people do, but I think it's important to make the distinction between the reality of sexual assault versus a forced sex fantasy, because those are two completely different things. And what I found was that 66% of self-identified women reported having fantasized about having sex forced on them before. And I think it was 51% of self-identified men had had those fantasies as well. People who identified as non-binary, a majority of them had these fantasies too. So regardless of gender identity, forced sex seems to be a very popular fantasy theme.
That is so interesting. Any other taboo, sort of really out there fantasies that came up that would surprise people?
I also ask people about, have you ever fantasized about forcing sex on someone else? Now, that I find is a lot less frequent than the fantasies about having sex forced on you. So more generally, people are turned on more by submission than they are by dominance, it seems. There's a little bit of a gender difference there, such that men tend to have more fantasies about being dominant than women do. But more often than not, it seems that in our fantasies, we often want to give up power and control. I think something that would surprise a lot of people is that a lot of men have these fantasies about submission. You know, we know what the stereotype, the gender role expectation is for men, and they're supposed to be dominant. They're supposed to be the initiators. But what I see in my data is that in men's fantasies, they want to give up that power and control and relieve themselves of that burden of the traditional gender role expectation.
Now, if you've been listening to all of this and are ready to start sharing your fantasies with your partner or someone else, keep listening. I have got a lot of tips and advice thanks to Sarah Tang, who I've called up. Sarah is a certified sex coach and sexologist who runs Sarah Sense, a platform that gives you the tools and resources to have a spicier sex life. She also hosts Better in Bed podcasts, one of my faves, where she shares a ton of advice around sex and pleasure and is basically a nonstop advocate for better sex education. So here's our interview. What advice do you have for couples who want to share their fantasies with each other?
I mean, I think it's great. I'm all for it. I think people who talk about sex have the best sex. So, you know, there's so many benefits to talking about fantasies with your partners. You know, it can add novelty to the relationship. It can be a source of arousal. And this is just by talking about it. You don't even have to do anything about it except for just talk about it. I think when we let our partners in, and when we let them have access to some of our innermost thoughts, and sharing fantasies is often a very vulnerable process, I think it really helps to build intimacy within the relationship, and it allows us to feel like we're fully seen by our partners. Yeah, so I think firstly, just to lay the groundwork around fantasies, I think we really need to normalize fantasies before we even normalize talking about fantasies. So I think in order, before talking about any fantasies, we need to ourselves realize that fantasies are healthy, that it's part of our erotic mind that gets excited about things outside our realm of reality or realm of possibilities. And that's totally okay. So I also think that it's important to make sure that your partner is kind of on the same page in terms of their understanding about fantasies as well. So the second thing I think is really important, and this is, again, just like all the groundwork before even talking about the fantasies, is to actually figure out if your fantasy is something that you want to keep as a fantasy or if you want to make it a reality. And I think clarifying your goal around talking about your fantasies is really important. So is your goal about building connection, or is your goal about figuring out whether your partner will be down to explore your fantasy with you? Because not all fantasies have to become reality. And it's really important to make that distinction when you're talking about it.
Maybe you're one of those partners that isn't as sexual or doesn't think they have that many fantasies, but their partner does, and maybe what they've shared feels a bit intense or weird or strange. Like, what do you advise people where, when they think, my partner shared something with me that feels really intense, that's a fantasy, how do I deal with that?
This is very tricky because obviously a lot of the times, you know, as human beings, we can all get very flooded with our emotions, and immediately we can sort of respond in the moment in ways that may not be compassionate to our partner. But I think if we do that, that actually teaches our partner not to open up again. It's something that is actually very harmful to the relationship in the long term if you want to have a very open and honest relationship with each other. So what I would suggest that you do is really just to validate your partner for sharing something so vulnerable. And even if you don't think it's going to be your thing as a fantasy, don't reject it straight away. Just try to stay curious. And if you ask them, why do you have this fantasy? What is the root to the turn on behind this? You know, that there may be parts that you could get on board with. Maybe it's not a full BDSM scenario with all the bells and whistles, but maybe you could engage in some light bondage or light spanking, you know. So I think it's important to give your partner this space to talk about it, because they've already made the step to share something so vulnerable with you. And I think when you're curious and when you learn more about it and you keep an open mind, you can also do things like kind of test drive the fantasy. You know, you may think about it and you may think, okay, well, maybe we can watch some erotic material together or engage in some naughty talk or dirty talk around the fantasy, and we can see how things feel. But I may not want to make it a reality, but I'm comfortable if maybe we do some dirty talk around it. So I think that's like options where you can kind of try to meet your partner at a point where maybe both of you may feel comfortable.
So far, we've talked a lot about how to share your fantasies when you have someone to share them with, a partner or somebody you want to explore this with. But what about when you're fantasizing and you don't have that someone to share it with or explore and live out your fantasies? All right, so we're coming to the technology part of the podcast here, and we're going to talk about how technology can help you with your fantasies. Now, this isn't some far-out robotic VR fantasy engine. It really is as simple as dating apps. Sarah and I talk about dating apps, specifically the one that is known to facilitate fantasy, pure.
We've been discussing dating apps, hookup apps, different apps around there, you know, through this hot fact summer period and people coming out of the pandemic, definitely having some desires and fantasies. Have you found anything out there that maybe helps single people with fantasies?
Pure particularly is an app that's built for hookups and casual sex. And we've actually talked about them on the Better in Bed podcast as well. So it's really simple to get started. So Pure asks you to post a personal ad or a listing about yourself with an option to add pictures if you want to. And then it works like a lot of the other apps. It relies on GPS to find you matches within your vicinity. And I think just writing your profile and putting your fantasy in words is a very empowering experience, you know, because it really normalizes the idea that everyone has fantasies. I have a fantasy, and it's a very healthy way to express them. And the, you know, an app like Pure also helps you feel less alone, because when it finds you matches, it shows that, you know, there's someone out there that's gonna share your fantasy too. Pure also has some specific safety and privacy features, which makes it great for hookups. So you can set your photos to self-destruct. And then one of my favorite features is that you can video chat with someone on the app. So you can use a filter that masks your identity. So they've got really, really cool designs, which are very fun to play around with. And Pure in general is a really, really well-designed and beautiful and fun app to use because of its design. So one of the masks that I used once to talk to somebody was this Egyptian pharaoh mask. I mean, it's so silly, but it's fun, you know. It just adds to the mystery and this idea that you have this fantasy alter ego that's,
yeah,
you know, whatever you want to be.
Yeah, it kind of creates some sort of, you know, because again, video dating, I think a lot of us are kind of tired of videos in general, right, after the last year. So how can you make it more fun? And also I think with dating, with new people, strangers, how can you make it feel safe? How can you make it feel anonymous? And things like filters, while making it fun, also give you that level of, I feel like, protection, you know, or as you said, like putting on a new persona at the same time.
Yeah. So actually Pure is really great for sexting and video sex and virtual sex. So that could totally be your fantasy. So that could totally be your jam. But I also think that if you're still at the stage where you're kind of working up the courage to explore your fantasy in real life and you don't want to go all the way yet, I think it's also a great solution for people like that, because you can sort of engage with somebody virtually. Firstly, you can see if they're real, which is really important on apps, right? And then secondly, you can kind of establish whether you've got a connection over video chat while still staying very discreet and anonymous, if that's important to you.
Thanks so much for listening to Future of Sex. Now, if you're interested in getting involved in the business side of sex, Sex Tech School is opening again shortly. You can head to sextechschool.com to get on the wait list. And thanks to my collaborators here at Future of Sex Podcast, David Lamb as producer and Chad Michael Snavely and the team at Sound On, Sound Off for their incredible editing. As always, follow us on Instagram at Future of Sex, and we will see you soon.